Around the World in 80 Days, by Jules Verne. Chapter 20, in which Fix comes face-to-face with Phileas Fogg. While these events were passing at the Opium House, Mr. Fogg, unconscious of the danger he was in losing the steamer, was quietly escorting Eudo about the streets of the English Quarter, making necessary purchases for the long voyage before them. It was all very well for an Englishman like Mr. Fogg to make the tour of the world with a carpet bag. A lady could not be expected to travel comfortably in such conditions. He acquitted his task with characteristic serenity, and invariably replied to the remonstrances of his fair companion, who was confused by his patience and generosity. "It is in the interest of my money, a part of my program. The purchases made, they returned to the hotel, where they dined at a sumptuously served table d'hôte, after which Ayuda, shaking hands with the protector of the English fashion, retired to her room for a rest. Mr. Fogg absorbed himself throughout the evening in the perusal of the Times and Illustrated London News. Had he been capable of astonished at anything, he would have not to have seen his servant return at bedtime, but knowing that a steamer was not to leave for Yokohama until the next morning, he did not disturb himself about the matter. When Passepartout did not appear the next morning to answer his master's bell, Mr. Fogg, not betraying the least vexation, contented himself with taking his carpet bag, calling Eudo, and sending for a palanquin. It was then 8 o'clock. At 9:30, it being then high tide, the Carnatic would leave the harbor. Mr. Fogg and Eudo got into the palanquin, their luggage being brought after on a wheelbarrow. A half-hour later stepped up on the quay whence they were to embark. Mr. Fogg then learned that the Connecticut had sailed the evening before. He had expected to find not only the steamer but his domestic, and was forced to give up both. But no sign of disappointment appeared on his face, and he merely remarked to Uda, "It is an accident, madam, nothing more." At this moment a man who had been observing him tentatively approached. It was Fix, who, bowing, addressed Mr. Fogg. "Were you not, like me, sir, a passenger on the Rangoon which arrived yesterday?" "I was, sir," replied Mr. Fogg coldly, "but I have not had the honour. Pardon me, I thought you'd only find your servant here." "Do you know where he is, sir?" "What?" responded Fix, feigning surprise. "Is he not with you?" "No. He has not made his appearance since yesterday. Could he have borne on board the Carmatic without us?" "Without you, madam," answered the detective. "Excuse me, did you intend to sail the Carnatic?" "Yes, I did." "So did I, madam. I am excessively disappointed. The Carnatic, its repairs being completed, left Hong Kong 12 hours before the stated time, without any notice being given, and we now must wait a week for another steamer." As he said a week, Fix felt his heart leap for joy. Fogg detained at Hong Kong for a week. There would be time for the warrant to arrive, and fortune at last favored the representative of the law. His horror may be imagined when he heard Mr. Fogg say in his placid voice, "For there are other vessels besides the Carnatic, it seems to me, in the harbor of Hong Kong." And offering his arm to Ada, he directed his steps toward the dock in search of some craft about to start. Fix, stupefied, to follow it. It seems as if he were really attached to Mr. Fogg by an invisible thread. Chance, however, appeared really to have abandoned the man, and it hitherto served so well. For 3 hours, Phileas Fogg wandered about the docks, with the determination, if necessary, to charter a vessel to carry him to Yokohama. But he could only find vessels which were loading or unloading, and which would not, therefore, set sail. Fix began to hope again, but Mr. Fogg, far from being discouraged, was continuing his search, resolved not to stop if he had to resort to Macau, when he was accosted by a sailor on one of the wharves. "Is Your Honor looking for a boat? Have you a boat ready to sail?" "Yes, Your Honor, a pilot boat, number 43, the best in the harbor. Does she go fast? Between 8 and 9 knots the hour. Will you look at her?" "Yes." "Your Honor will be satisfied with her. Is it for a sea excursion?" "No, for a voyage." "A voyage?" "Yes. Will you agree to take me to Yokohama?" The sailor leaned on the rating, opened his eyes wide, and said, "Is Your Honor joking?" "No, I have missed the Carmatic, and I must get to Yokohama by the 14th at the latest, to take the boat for San Francisco." "I am sorry," said the sailor, "but it is impossible. I offer you £100 per day, and an additional award of £200 if I reach the Yokohama in time. Are you in earnest?" "Very much so." The pilot walked away a little distance, gazed out to sea, evidently struggling between the anxiety to earn a large sum and the fear of venturing so far. Fix was in mortal suspense. Mr. Fogg turned away Ada and asked her, "You would not be afraid, would you, madam?" "Not with you, Mr. Fogg," was her answer. The pilot now returned, shuffling his hat in his hands. "Well, pilot," said Mr. Fogg. "Well, Your Honor," replied he, "I could not risk myself, my men, or my little boat of scarcely 20 tons on so long a voyage at this time of year. Besides, we could not reach Yokohama in time, for it is 1,660 miles from Hong Kong." "Only 1,600, said Mr. Fogg. "It's the same thing." Fix breathed more freely. "But," added the pilot, "it might be arranged another way." Fix ceased to breathe at all. "How?" asked Mr. Fogg. "By going to Nagasaki, at the extreme south of Japan, or even to Shanghai, which is only 800 miles from here. In going to Shanghai, we could not be forced to sail the wide of the Chinese coast, which would be a great advantage, as the currents run northward and would aid us." "Pilot, I must make the American steam at Yokohama, and not at Shanghai or Nagasaki." "Why not?" returned the pilot. "Then San Francisco does not start from the Yokohama. It puts in at Yokohama and Nagasaki, but starts from Shanghai." You are sure of that? Perfectly. And when does the boat leave Shanghai? On the 11th at 7 in the evening. We therefore have 4 days before us. That is 96 hours, and in that time, if we have good luck and a southwest wind, and the sea was calm, we could make those 800 miles to Shanghai, and you could go in an hour. As soon as provisions got aboard on the ship and the sails put up, it is a bargain. Are you the master of the boat? Yes. John Busby, master of the Tankard. Would you like some earnest money? If it would not put your honor out, here are 200 pounds on the account, sir. Added Phineas Fogg, turning to Fix. If you'd like to take advantage, thanks, sir. I was about to ask the favor. Very well, and in half an hour we shall go on board. But poor Passepartout, urged Aouda, who is much disturbed by the servant's disappearance. I shall do all I can to find him. All Fix, in a feverish, nervous state, repaired to the pilot boat. The others directed their course to the police station at Hong Kong. Phileas Fogg there gave Passepartout's description and left a sum of money to be spent on the search. For him, the same formalities have been gone through the French consulate, and the Pelican have stopped at the hotel for luggage, which have been sent back there they returned to the wharf. It was now 3 o'clock, and pilot boat number 43, with its crew on board and its provisions stored away, was ready for departure. The Tankard was a neat little craft of 20 tons, as gracefully built as if she were a racing yacht. Her shining copper sheathing, her galvanized ironwork, and her deck, white as ivory, betrayed the pride taken by John Busby in making her presentable. Her two masts leaned a trifle backward. She carried a brigantine, foresail, storm jib, standing jib, and was well rigged for running before the wind. And she seemed capable of brisk speed, which indeed she had already proved by gaining several prizes in pilot boat races. The crew of the Tankard were composed of John Busby, the master, 4 hardy mariners who were familiar with the Chinese seas, John Busby himself, a man over 45 thereabouts, vigorous, sunburnt, with a sprightly expression of the eye and energetic, self-reliant countenance, would have inspired confidence in the most timid. Phileas Fogg and Aouda went on board, where they found Fix already installed below deck. It was a square cabin, of which the walls bulged out in the form of cots, above a circular divan. In the center was a table provided with a swinging lamp. The accommodation was confined, but neat. "I'm sorry I have nothing better to offer you," said Mr. Fogg to Fix, who bowed without responding. The detective had a feeling akin to humiliation in profiting by the kindness of Mr. Fogg. "It is certain," thought he, "though rascal he is a polite one." The sails and the English flag were hoisted 3:10. Mr. Fogg and Aouda, who were seated on the desk, cast a last glance at the quay in hopes of espying Passepartout. Fix was not within his fears lest chance should direct the steps of the unfortunate servant, whom he had so badly treated. In this direction, in which a case explanation of the reverse of satisfactory due to the detective must have ensued, but the Frenchman did not appear, and without doubt was still lying under the stupefying influence of opium. John Bunsby, master, at length gave the order to start, and the Tankard, taking on the wind of her brigantine, foresail and standing jib, bounded briskly forward over the waves. End of chapter 20. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go, available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.